Testament lesson comes from Joshua 3, 7 through 17. Hear these ancient words.
And the Lord said to Joshua,
"Today I will begin to exalt you in the eyes of all Israel, so that they may know that I am with you, as I was with Moses. Tell the priests who carry the Ark of the Covenant, when you reach the edge of the Jordan's waters, go and stand in the river."
Joshua said to the Israelites,
"Come here and listen to the words of the Lord your God. This is how you will know that the living God is among you, and that he will certainly drive out before you the Canaanites, Hittites, Hivites, Perizzites, Girgashites, Amorites, and Jebusites. See, the Ark of the Covenant, the Lord of all the earth, will go into Jordan ahead of you. Now then, choose 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one from each tribe. And soon as the priests who carry the Ark of the Lord of all the earth, set foot in the Jordan, its waters flowing downstream will be cut off and stand in a heap."
So the people broke camp across the Jordan, the priests carrying the Ark went ahead of them.
Now the Jordan is at flood stage during the harvest. Yet as soon as the priests who carried the Ark reached the Jordan and their feet touched the water's edge, the water from upstream stopped flowing. It piled up in a heap a great distance away at a town called Adam in the vicinity of Zerithian. While the water flowing down from the Sea of Arabath, that is the Dead Sea, was completely cut off.
So the people crossed over opposite Jericho. The priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stopped in the middle of the Jordan and stood on dry ground, while all Israel passed by until the whole nation had completed the crossing on dry ground.
The word of God for the people of God.
Thanks be to God.
Go ahead, have a seat. Does anybody want to share? Yes, ma'am. I'm trying to think if that ruins my sermon. Who? Jack Reacher. Those are bad movies, man. Anybody else? Jack Reacher, Scarlett. Yes, ma'am.
Dazzler.
Who?
Dazzler.
But is she human?
Yes.
Does she have superpowers?
Yes.
Then she doesn't count. It ruins the whole sermon. It has to be like someone, like it can't be, like Jill would pick Wonder Woman. But it can't be Wonder Woman because she drives, flies an invisible plane. Huh? Yes, ma'am. Save me. Save me. Who? That was Max. Atticus Finch. He works fine. Those of you who don't know who it is, shame on you. In the back. Who?
Bob, James Bob.
That works. In the other bag. That works, Frodo. It doesn't ruin my sermon. Thank you. One more, Don.
Dr. Van Helsing.
Who?
Dr. Van Helsing.
I think that works. I got to play it through my head. Okay. So anyhow, reason why I asked is because I have a confession. Growing up, I always wondered what a hero was, right? I mean, I was kind of always fascinated with heroes, and I don't know exactly why. And I'm not talking Superman and Batman, at all, but what I wanted to know is what really is a hero? And the only example I had that I could think of was like Clint Eastwood or John Wayne when you throw yourself on a live grenade and you save your squad. Now, the problem with that is you're a dead hero. And so you can't enjoy being a hero. And so I don't want to be a dead hero. So I always was wondering, what makes a hero a hero? I mean, there are guys and gals, who are good people, but are they heroes? And as I grew, I always kind of wondered that, and there's stories why, and I can tell you some other time. But when I was in college, I've told you about the three classes I took, Death and Dying, Killing People, Killing Time, by a guy named Wyatt, mean parents. And he was doing a new class, one that he never taught before, and it was on heroes in culture, in literature, and in movies. Well, of course, I took it. One, I was making A's in Wyatt's class, and two, was going to answer my question. So the very first day, right, first day, Dr. Wyatt asked the question, what makes someone a hero? So after about an hour worth of debate and discussion, Wyatt wrote on the board something like this. A hero is someone who changes his or her world for the better. And I thought, that's a hero. Atticus Finch did. Don Quixote did. Jackie Robinson did. Luke Skywalker sure did. Dorothy from Wizard of Oz. Her world, not the whole world, her world, right? And then the next few classes, Wyatt talked about the journey every hero must make, right? He believed there were five series of steps that anyone who's going to be a hero had to go through. The first was they found themselves in a mundane world, right? A world that they were bored in, a world that they might not really wanted to be. For Dorothy, it was Kansas. For Frodo, it was the Shire, right? So that's the first step. Then there was always the call to adventure, or the call to action, whichever one you wanted to use, right? And that was the spark that shows the hero that there's something else out there. For Luke in Star Wars, it was when he saw the hologram of Princess Leia who told him, "You got to save us." Call to adventure. Something else out there. The third is called crossing the threshold. Crossing the threshold is the first step the hero makes to get into this new world. For Harry Potter, it's when he goes through the wall and ends up in Hogsworth, or however that worked. Right? The fourth step is the longest. It's called the Path of Trials. Path of Trials is where the hero meets new people, some good, some not so good, some friends, some enemies, learns new skills, and faces huge challenges. And then the fifth step is the Master of Two Worlds. The hero, usually then, she or he has conquered the new world and goes back and as a changed person to change the world they came from. For Dorothy, it was she conquered Oz and she came back, and we like to think Kansas was her world in Kansas was better because she understood what was most important. With me? See, that's the hero's journey. I thought a lot about that over the last few weeks because when you read this story in Joshua that was read, you get the sense that Joshua was a hero, right? Right? But here's what I realized. Joshua is not the only hero in that story. The entire nation of Israel were heroes. Right? You heard the story. You may know the story. Joshua has taken over from Moses. And Moses had died, buried. They were still in the wilderness because, remember, Moses couldn't enter into the promised land. So Joshua took over from Moses, and they were in the wilderness. Now, the wilderness for Joshua, that's Frodo Shire, right? That's the mundane world. That's the world he knew. There was some, that's the world, and he didn't want to stay in that world, right? But that's the world he was in. That's the wilderness, right? And his call to adventure happens not in the third chapter that we read, but in the second chapter. Because in chapter 2, verse 24, two spies come back, and they report what's going on in the land that God promised them. And they report that God was right. You've got that 224? You have that put up? Yeah. They said to Joshua, "The Lord has definitely given the entire land into our power. In addition, all the land's population has melted down in fear." So Joshua, that was his call to adventure, because he knew at that moment there was something else out there. He made the decision he was going, right? So he sends word through the camp, and he says, "Tomorrow we're heading. Tomorrow morning we're packing up and we're heading that way." And it wasn't very far from where they were camped, and they got to what's known as the Jordan River. And the Jordan River is the river that separated the wilderness where they were from where they wanted to go, the promised land. And I imagine as they're walking, these people, these Israelites who had been wandering around in the desert, who their ancestors wandered in the wilderness, they wandered in the wilderness, their ancestors' ancestors wandered in the wilderness, and they were finally excited because they knew, because Joshua said, "This is the day we're crossing over. This is the day we're going to grab what God has given us. This is it." And they were excited. And I just guarantee you, they were making promises. "We're going to be different. Our fathers, our grandfathers, our mothers, our grandmothers, they blew it. They disobeyed God. They didn't trust God. But we're doing it right. We're going to trust God every step of the way," right? And so they get to the Jordan River and their hearts sink. Because they had never seen the Jordan. They didn't know what to expect. And they get there, and they expected to find like a little stream. But instead, it was flood season, according to the story. And this river that was probably 35 feet, 40 feet across, had flooded its banks and now was a mile across. And it wasn't a lazy river that you would tube in. It was a raging rapid. They say that in flood season, the Jordan River can get as fast as 40 mile per hour currents. And it was no longer just 3 or 4 feet deep. It's now 12 feet deep at the minimum. And so they come to that, and they see that, and their hearts sink because they know it is not possible for them to get across that. And they sit on the banks and they feel absolutely stuck. You ever been there? You know the abundant life that God has promised is right there, and yet you get, and there's this blocking you. So here's what happens. Joshua gives him the command. He sends his people through. And he says this: "As soon as you see the Lord, your God's chest," the Ark of the Covenant, by the way. This is how it should be translated. It's the Ark of the Covenant. Ark of the Covenant, the most sacred object the Jewish people had. For them, that's where God resided. And whenever the Ark went, God was there. Right? "When you see the Ark of the Covenant being carried by the priest, you are to march out from your places and follow it. But let there be some distance between you and it, about 3,000 feet. Don't come near it. You will know the way you should go, even though you've never traveled this way before." Now, I love that Joshua was so specific. 3,000 feet, 1,000 yards. Anybody want to guess why? It had nothing to do with it being holy and someone might touch it. See, what Joshua was telling the people they had to do, they had to keep their eyes on God, on the ark, what they believed was God. Right? What carried God. And they had to keep their eyes focused on God. And he said to the people, "You need to be at least 1,000 yards away. Because then you can still see the ark. If everybody was too close, people in the back may not be able to see it. There needed to be a line of sight on the ark. And then he says this. All right? And when the soles of the priest's feet who are carrying the ark come to rest in the water of Jordan, at that moment, the water of Jordan will be cut off. Now, there's no movies about this one, right? We get the Red Sea, Cecil DeMille, dramatic. This one doesn't, most of us don't even know the story, right? And if I was one of the people of Israel that day, I'd be angry, wouldn't you? I mean, think about it. You don't have to answer honestly, but you'd be angry. Because see, you knew that your ancestors, they by the time they got to the Red Sea, it was already parted. They didn't have to do anything. It was dry. They could see across. It wasn't a mile walk. It was easy. Right? But these people were told, I'm not going to stop the water till you step in it. You have to trust me enough that you step in the water, then I'm going to stop it. You have to walk by faith. You have to take the first step. You have to get your feet wet or else the water's not stopping. I would not be happy. I don't know about you. I want to go where the water's already parted and I can see the way clear, but not these, no. Now picture that. People on the bank, the priest carrying the ark. Everybody's keeping their eyes on it, waiting, wondering what's going to happen. Priests hit the water. They stand. The water begins to slow down just a little. Then a trickle. And it stops. The people of Israel walk across. They cross the threshold. See, I love that story because the people of Israel stood at the threshold and they had their mundane world and they had their call to adventure, and this is their moment of decision. And what I love about it, it is so out of character for them, right? Right? For 40 years in the wilderness, they are defined by grumbling and complaining. I mean, right? They complained about everything. They were hungry, so God gave them manna. They got tired of the manna, so God gave them quail. They got the quail, and they said, don't you have anything else? Right? They complained all the time, 24-7. They disobeyed God. They made a golden. This was way out of character. On that day, though, at that moment, the people of Israel actually chose to be defined by something other than complaining and bickering and grumbling. They chose to be defined as people of faith. People who are willing to take the first step. People who are willing to get their feet wet. And on that moment, that day, at that Jordan River, they got it and they did it and they crossed over into a new world with path of trials in front of them. But for that moment, they were heroes. So I love the story. And I think about it and I get it and I understand how they feel. And I'm willing to bet most of you do too. Because most of us have been in a position where we see the abundant life God is offering to us. It's right there. Right? And we're walking to it and we tell God, we're going to do this. We're going to step out. We're going to get this one. We're going to follow you, God. We're going to, wherever you lead me, I'm going. I'm going to follow you. And then we get to the Jordan River, whatever that is, and it's raging. And instead of taking a step of faith, what do? We sit down on the bank and we sulk. And the raging river is whatever you want it to be. It can be cancer. It can be a medical condition. It can be finances. It can be a divorce. It can be a broken relationship. It can be anxiety or fear or worry. There is something that we come to. And we say we can't go. We can't cross it. We know you're right there, God, but we can't. We're just here. And then we get our marching orders. Somebody, either a preacher or our devotion or a friend or maybe God himself nudges us and says, look, keep your eyes focused on God. You got to take the step. We have a decision to make. How are we going to be defined in that moment? Are we going to be defined as people who just sit in the mud, stuck in the wilderness? Or are you going to be defined as someone who was willing to get their feet wet? Someone who is willing to step out? I want to be defined as a person of faith. That no matter what was in front of me, I walked by faith and not by sight. You know, I was thinking about it. It's not only true for us as individuals, it's true for a church. I mean, I've pastored churches that were stuck in the mud, stuck in the wilderness. And they didn't want to, they saw nothing but obstacles. They knew the promise of God was right there to be an impact in the kingdom, and they just said, you know what, we're just stopping. And I thought about that because, you know, as I was doing that 2020 plan, that relaunch that's going to take us into 2020 and make us a vital congregation, hopefully, so that we become a huge impact in the kingdom of God by 2020, right? That plan that we adopted. I spent a lot of time talking to Richard because I wanted to know about the church that left Present Street and moved here. Because I wanted to know about that church, that congregation, that community. If you were part of that church, that congregation, that community, raise your hand. If you're part of Present Street, came over here. Look at that. Unbelievable. Right? See, I wanted to know about you guys. Because I wanted to know how you made the decision to define yourself not by the barriers, not by the obstacles, but by faith. Because that's what that step was. Look, it would have been a whole lot easier staying Present Street. It would have been a whole lot cheaper. You wouldn't have a huge debt, right? You wouldn't have been meeting with 600 people, whatever, in the fellowship hall, three services going crazy. You wouldn't have been worried about building this building and that part of the building and that part of the building. And it would have just been easier. But somewhere, somehow, some people said, no, God is leading us there. Right? And that's where we're going. And I wonder if I was in Richard's shoes, would I have had the vision and the courage and the faith to say, I'm stepping out. There's no reason, but I'm stepping out. Because that gives the church the future. And if I was in the congregation, would I have been willing to go? Or would I have said, you know what, I'm taking my toys, I'm going to another church. You see, we're at the threshold. We're beginning the next 3 weeks or so to talk about how we're going to define this congregation. Part of it's going to be stewardship. Part of it's going to be budget. But here's what I believe. The way we answer the question about how we're going to be defined will shape whether or not we're a vibrant congregation in 2020. The way we answer the question of how we're going to be defined will shape whether or not we're even a congregation in 2020. See, because I believe the decisions we make now will either carry us or we'll sit in the mud. Will Rogers, who, by the way, one of my heroes, Will Rogers one time said this. He said, we all can't be heroes because somebody has to sit on the curb and clap as they go by. Right? And I love that. And I used it at Ed's funeral because I believe that. But I don't agree with it fully. Because here's what I believe. I believe we can all be heroes if we're willing to get our feet wet, if we're willing to be defined by faith. See, because that's when we say we're going to leave this world that we're comfortable in, and we're called to do something more. And then we stand at the threshold, and then we have the courage to step, to cross the threshold into this new world. But it all boils down to how you're going to be defined. As for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. And that's the gospel. And that's what we're called to do. There's the rest of the story, though. In the fourth chapter, Joshua does this weird thing, right? They cross over, and rather than celebrate, what does he do? He says, I want 12 of you, one from each tribe, to go back into the Jordan. Now, there's no record that it's still dry. I want you to go into the Jordan, and I want you each to get a big old rock. I want you to carry it back here. And when they did, they made this, they stacked the rocks, 12 of them, on top of each other. And they made this, for lack of a better word, a monument, a pillar. And it served one purpose and one purpose only. That whenever the people of Israel saw that, they would remember the day that they defined themselves not by grumbling, not by complaining, but to find themselves as people of faith. People who are willing to get their feet wet. People who are willing to be heroes and start a new world. And all that means. And so what I think we're going to do is we're going to build our own monument. If we did this right, and I was over there, so I don't know, I'm trusting, I'm walking on faith, that there should be 12 people with stones who should be standing up at this moment and walking forward at this moment. And we're going to build here. Matt's going to help you build a monument. So that, and this monument will be here. Now, it may also show up at other places, but it's here. And when we see that, you're going to remember the way you answer the question. People of faith, or something else.